Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome back to Upfront. I'm Rachel O'Sullivan. Today, we welcome a referee onto the pod for the very first time. Georgia Ball is an assistant referee in the WSL and a referee in the Championship. She also ran the line for last year's FA Cup final, and last month she was made a FIFA-qualified referee, making her eligible for international fixtures and major tournaments. Georgia is also involved in Breaking Barriers, which is all about sending referees out into the community and inspiring the next generation. She's been there and done it, so from online abuse to how decisions are made on the pitch, we're going to find out what it really takes to be a top-level referee in the women's game. Well, welcome to Upfront, Georgia. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm so excited to have you on the pod.
No, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm going to start with the age-old question. Who would want to be a referee? I want to know what made you want to be a referee.
Yeah, so, I mean, originally, I won't lie, it was for a bit of pocket money. I was 14. My family loved football. I used to play football, albeit badly, before taking up refereeing. And it's one of those things, and it's one of those questions where you think, I don't really know the answer. You fall into it. I got into it and then I just loved being involved back in the game and the life skills you kind of get from it as well. Obviously being 14 and quite a small person at the time, the confidence and stuff that you get from reffing that you can kind of take into life, which as a female in sport is a difficult environment to be in at times, and to kind of get that confidence through reffing was great. And then it's one of those things that you just fall into and then you can't fall out of, and you just learn to love it. And obviously with the game now, like growing, like the games that I've been involved in and now I'm involved in like professional football, which like I say, I played and I was never going to play professional football. So to be involved in professional football and get to go to some of the stadiums that we get to go to now, it was kind of like a no-brainer to carry it on now I'm a bit older.
I think it's probably something we forget as people who watch football, and it's something I definitely recognized when I came up to join you at your training session back in March and I was there taking photographs, is like in the same way that a lot of us started, I don't know, covering football, for example, because it was a passion and something you really loved, and then it became a job. And I could really feel that in the room as well with a lot of people. You were all really passionate about refereeing and football.
Yeah, and I think that's it. And I think we are almost like the forgotten team, and like we love it. We love football and at the minute, yeah, it's not our jobs, but we're also professional. And I mean, like you say, you came to the camp and the work that the girls put in across the board, we do it because we love it. And we want to see the game grow as much as anybody else. And it really is. We all started as fans of football. I remember watching England ladies on the telly as like a 14-year-old girl. And even just before I started reffing kind of at that level, like watching the Euros and watching World Cups, and now we're out with those girls every weekend, and it's surreal for us, and the games that we go to are massively about the two teams on the pitch, but there's almost that element that like we're almost in awe as well, like we still feel so lucky to be involved because we are essentially all football fans.
I will get on to some of the big games you've been involved in, but I guess a lot has changed since you were 14. Rules are changing, for example. You know, we're seeing this season, obviously, more cards are being handed out than ever before in the WSL with the introduction of the Participant Behaviour Charter, which is obviously targeting things like dissent and time wasting and stuff. Why do you think, like, was that it's an important step, I guess. Why do you think that was such an important step, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's really important for, like, the image of the game. I think as referees, we work alongside the clubs and the players and managers, and we're all working together to make the game the best we can make it and to ensure that we see as much football played as possible and to make it enjoyable to watch, but also for it to be played in the correct manner. And to be fair, everyone's really bought into it, and I think we can see it working. And I think, like everything, every new law that comes in, there's teething problems, and there's bound to be because, like you say, it's ever growing and it's ever changing. But I think we all see it as a really positive move, and that's right through from players, managers and the referees. And I think we as referees still have a really important responsibility to ensure that it all starts on field, and that's controlling the game and maintaining relationships with players and clubs and management to build trust in our decisions initially. But I think it's a really important step to really keep football growing and make it the game we want it to be. And I still think we have that kind of ability to shape the game in a positive way.
How has it changed the way you officiate at all?
I don't think it's changed how we officiate. I think it's made us more aware. And I think it's actually bettered our officiating because we're more aware that it's there. But it just means that we're trying to build more on field so that we don't have to get to the point, because we don't want to be dishing cards out. Like, it's not our goal when we go on the game, like, let's see how many cards we can kind of give out. So to us, it's then, right, what can we do on field with building relationships and with game control and player management to ensure that we don't have to do it, but by still getting the objective of making the game as positive as we can.
I know it's unfortunately something that's growing in the game, not just for players, but for referees as well, that kind of abuse that is directed towards you as a ref. And your first season, I'm right in thinking, in the WSL was during the COVID season, so you kind of didn't have to deal with fans for a little
very
while.
Quiet.
So how do you deal with that? Is that something you discuss when you guys come together at your training sessions and stuff like that?
Yeah, so we're really, really lucky. Like, we have so much support from the PGMOL, coaches, sports psychologists, sports scientists. So obviously the sports scientist helps with the on-field performances, but then coaches and sports psychologists are helping with that increased scrutiny, which it was bound to come because we all know that the game's growing like massively over the last few years. And with that comes scrutiny because it means more to people. And we love to see the growth and we love to see how much fans are involved. And it's difficult because for every one negative comment, there's hundreds of positives. But like anything, we focus on the negatives because it's within us, isn't it, as people, is we go straight for the negatives. But we're so lucky with the support we get from PGML. And also, like, I mean, you went to camp. You can see how close-knit we all are. And obviously, I can only speak personally, but I'm really lucky with my family and my partner and my friends who I can go to after games if I need a chat. But at the end of the day, like, unfortunately, we are human and these mistakes will happen, and we don't go out to make them intentionally. Like, players don't, you know, players make mistakes and they get the scrutiny as well. And the mistakes are bound to happen, and we have access to the performance insights and coaches to make us get to this highest level that we can. But mistakes are inevitable, and we love the game as much as anybody else, and we're trying to kind of maintain this kind of growth that's just massive. And like I say, mistakes will happen, and we are getting more and more support to combat the scrutiny when it does come our way.
I know sometimes players talk about, like, they don't really hear the fans, especially when it's a really noisy game. Is it similar for you, where you're kind of like, you're so focused and switched on to what's happening on the pitch that you don't really hear the noise behind you?
Yeah, it's almost like there's so much other things going on. Obviously, we have our headsets in so we can speak to the referee and the fourth official, and then you're concentrating on a tight offside decision, and it's almost, there's noise, but it is just noise, and it's I couldn't tell you what's said ever really in a game. And it is normally the kind of online stuff afterwards that is more of a problem, because it's harder to ignore because it's on a screen, it's right in front of you, whereas at a game it just becomes noise.
Put us in your shoes during a match, because I know we've talked about the hundreds, if not kind of thousands of decisions, I suppose, you're making in that 90 minutes. You've got your headset on, you know, you're talking, and that's something maybe my eyes were open to a little bit at this training camp, was listening to the conversation between the three of you and the fourth official as well. And, you know, put us in your shoes in that respect. What's it like when you go on? Do you constantly talk to each other, or what's it like?
Yeah, I mean, the comms are quite, I mean, they're relatively new for us as a group. We've not had them for like years and years like the guys have. And it took some getting used to, because you go from just quiet to now every decision is discussed. I think I expected it to be more of a discussion and talking all the time. But as much as we talk through decisions, we're very mindful that we've not got long to make these decisions. So we train, like you saw at the camp, it's all very clear and concise. It's one word three times so that we know what's happening. And I think, to be fair, players and managers really get on board with it. And they understand now that it is no longer just the referee making the decision or the assistant making the decision. Sometimes we do need like a jigsaw, and I might have half of the piece, but I need the referee to tell me what the other half is. And it does add another element of almost difficulty to the game. And I think when people listen to it, I know obviously you heard it at camp, and I know Football Focus have done a few bits where you can hear the comms. And everyone I've spoke to said, that to me was like incredible, because how you run the line and speak to somebody and make a decision. And I think it was really good for people to educate people on that, because it almost gives people a bit of an insight into what we do for 90 plus minutes on a Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, it's something I know people often compare it to rugby. It's something I really enjoy when you can hear the decision, because it's almost like things just kind of flow quicker, because you're like, all right, yeah, that makes sense. I've really enjoyed those Football Focus pieces where you kind of go behind the scenes a little bit.
Yeah.
You've touched on, you know, the game getting bigger, how much you're enjoying that. Has it become harder as the game's gotten bigger, or, you know, were the grassroots gigs more difficult?
Yeah, it's a strange one, because on paper it should get harder, but I think as the games get harder, we're getting better. Our support, as the game grows, our support grows. So we have access to so much now that we didn't have access to a few years ago. Like I say, the pretty much on-demand sports science and sports psychology support that through a quick text on WhatsApp, we've set up a Teams meeting, we've set up a meeting, and we can chat through whatever we need. And the analysis of games, you know, we can go through now our full game with comms and listen to it and clip it and go to a coach and say, how can this be better? So even though the games are getting bigger and the players are getting faster and fitter and technically better, we are keeping up with that. So the games, the pressure is obviously increased because the crowds are bigger, the stadiums are bigger. But as like I say at the beginning, as fans of football, we almost like thrive off that. Like you walk out to a stadium and there's 40,000 people at the Emirates or whatever, and that to us is like, right, okay, it's game time now. Like we're like the players, like we do thrive off the pressure. And I think as the game grows and we grow, it's quite nice to look back and go, yeah, like not that long ago, I was at grassroots. I mean, I bet it was only 6 years ago that I was kind of doing grassroots, and it's just a completely different game. You kind of can't compare the two. That you don't get the support at grassroots, and sometimes that can make grassroots more difficult. But I think even in grassroots now, like, referees are getting kind of mentored through to ensure that we're not going to be at this level of reffing forever. Unfortunately, age will catch up with us at some point, and we've got to ensure that there's people coming up through grassroots to take our spots and be better than us going forward.
I mean, yeah, I remember matches where like you wouldn't have a fourth official, and if you were running the line, you'd have to get down and, you know, you're doing the subs and all that kind of stuff. You know, when I, speaking of pressure, like when you have to make a big decision in a big match, lots of fans, it's a bit like, I guess, a player stepping up over a penalty, right? But you don't have the time, I guess, in the same way they do to think about what they're going to do. It's much more high pressure. Well, it's both high pressure, but like you have a much quicker or shorter period to make that decision.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like I keep banging on about it, but the training we do is focused on that. We have split seconds to make a decision, and it's purely what we see in front of us, and we don't get the slow-mo after, or we don't get to go back and do it again, and we have to just make that call. And alongside that, like you say, you've got the added pressure of however many thousand people in the crowd and however many thousands now that can watch at home, which is great. But we have had to work on that because for a lot of us, we've not been used. I mean, like you say, my first season was COVID. I was walking out in empty grounds with no one shouting at me. And now we've got, you know, we're often selling out the big stadiums, aren't we? And it just adds another element to your decision making. It's like being sat at work and having 40,000 people shouting at you while you type on a spreadsheet. Like, no one wants that. But we train for that now. And like I say, the support we get on that has meant that it's almost become the norm now, and we almost don't really think about that now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, and join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Referees in the WSL are mostly part-time. 20% of the women's group now are full-time, which is great. How do you juggle that with whatever other commitments you have? I know, I remember there were some there who were surgeons and all sorts, and also doing refereeing.
Yeah. So like I say, 20%. So I think there's 15 of us now that are on professional contracts. And I think that's only ever going to kind of grow and rise. And although only kind of 15 of us have professional contracts, the whole group are professional in the approach to the game. And like you say, you've got people who are surgeons, teachers, accountants. and it's not as exciting as surgeons, is it? But yeah, and we all do both. There's a few that are full time, but I think that just shows how committed that group is as a group of referees. You know, it's recently doubled in size. I think from the camp that you came to the most recent camp, there's like thousands of us. But that's because the game's growing. So as the game grows and evolves, we grow and evolve, and the group's got bigger. There's more diversity. So match officials coming into the group like have more role models to look up to. It's no longer just, I remember when I first joined the group, it was the FIFA girls. Whereas now it's the FIFA girls, but we've actually got guys there, and we've got people from like ethnic minorities, so that when people are coming into the group, they can see a role model and go, well, if they can ref on the Super League, like I can ref on the Super League. And I think that's great. And I think the regular training camps obviously mean that we can carry on that growth of professionalism, and the support staff just grows and grows and grows. Every time we turn up to a camp, there's a new sports scientist or a new sports psychologist. And I think that shows the growth. But equally, we do have to juggle it with commitments, because as much as the game's growing, it's not going to grow overnight. So we have to accept that, yeah, we will get the contracts and they'll be part-time, but it's not an overnight fix. And for the time being, the surgeons will have to carry on in surgery Monday to Friday. But again, I mean, we get the training plans and the sports scientists know what our kind of week looks like and can fit training around that. So they probably have a harder job with us because they have to kind of fit it around other commitments. But I think it does just show how professional the group is and just how committed they are to kind of being the best officials we can be.
And for our listeners' benefit, that training, I know, so you have camps and they were, you know, across kind of 3 or 4 days. You've got classroom stuff. You're out in the rain on the pitches. I remember that much because I was out there with you. For their benefit, what does that look like? And then I guess outside of those camps, what are you doing?
Yeah, so the camps, we have like 4 camps a year. So like you say, there's one in kind of March time. We have a pre-season, we have a Christmas, and then we have another one somewhere, that October time. And yeah, they're normally over kind of 3 days over the weekend. So it's normally a weekend where it's international break, so there's no WSL games and championship games to kind of miss out on. And yeah, a massive range of stuff as a group, because we very rarely get together as a group. We're all based here, there and everywhere. So we sit in classrooms. We do classroom sessions where we'll analyse clips, good and bad, to learn from. There's kind of a very strong kind of ethos that no matter who's on that clip, it's not to kind of say this is what they've done wrong. It is to learn as a group, and everyone's really kind of in on that, and it's really strong throughout the weekend. And then there's, like you say, the practical stuff outside. So whether that's fitness testing, which obviously we go through, or whether it is just practical sessions where they've started bringing in a lot of sessions where we'll do like a high intensity session, but include some decision making. So there might be like a VAR type screen that we then go and have to make a decision after being put through a high intensity workout. So, and it's great to train as a group, because like I say, we learn so much from each other, and there's such a range of experience now the group's getting bigger. You've got people like Rebecca Welsh, who was obviously where she is now, which is incredible, down to people who may have might be their first camp, and the amount of stuff that you can learn from both sides is great. And then, yeah, outside of camps, we have bi-weekly teams calls. So every other week, every other Thursday, we drop on a call and we analyse more clips, again, as a group, and they're discussed and learnt from. And then obviously our own match analysis, which we do weekly, and clip bits and go to our coaches and discuss our own personal games. So we are like constantly training and constantly striving for improvement and to develop, basically.
Yeah, I remember that bit in the trainings when you were going through clips and some of you were in the room that were involved in it or involved in a decision that was wrong, and then you discussed it and what was going through their head at the time. And yeah, that was, it was really interesting, actually. Really interesting way of doing it. You touched on it there. You've been at the Breaking Barriers event, which is all about inspiring the next generation. And you touched on kind of diversity and how that's growing at your PGMOL camps, which is brilliant. Do you think more women are trying to get into refereeing, or what kind of do you think the barriers have been to that previously?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's never been a better opportunity to be a referee or an assistant, a match official, because it's so different, but it's such a great role. Like I said at the beginning, I would never have got to go to the grounds and have the experiences as a player, and kind of reffing is the next best thing. You know, 4 out of the 5 new FIFA list for this year came from the women's group, which I think shows the talent and the opportunities that are coming through for us. And yeah, I was at the Breaking Barriers event at Wolves just the other night, and, you know, I think a guy came up to me and said, oh, we've got our cup final evening next week, and it's like the most amount of female officials we've ever had on cup finals in our county. And I was like, that's great, because I remember when I first started, I was the only female referee that I knew of in this area. And there was others, but we just didn't know. And I think now people know. And it's not that, you know, by no means do we want to become famous or household names, but like your likes of Bex and Sean, who are household names, just means that there's people to look up to that we didn't have when we were younger. And I think had we had that, there'd have been more coming through. And I think now you can walk into a room and you know, there was quite a few like young females in the room on the other night. And I just think for them to have someone to resonate with and say, oh, well, if she can do it, like I can do it, is great. And that's across everything, whether it's females, whatever the kind of group we're targeting. I think it's just great now that, and even things like this, like podcast. Who had podcasts before that focused on women's football? Like, it just wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
So I think now for it to be a thing is just great.
To go back to you, what's maybe the hardest thing about refereeing that people maybe don't know about?
I think for us it's that expectation. And I think having played and reffed, as a player, if you misplace a pass, no one's massively kind of fussed. There might be a few like groans and grumbles, but you've got 90 minutes to kind of make up for that. If I get an offside decision right, there's like that expectation to be perfect. And like I said earlier, like mistakes will happen, but I think it's that expect, and it's probably an expectation we also put on ourselves. Like we go out and we're like, right, we're going to get every single decision right. And when you look back at the amount of decisions we make in a game, you think, I'm not actually sure that's like physically possible. And I think it is that, I think it's like we said at the beginning as well, it's that we're so just forgotten about, which, yes, it is football and we are, like, it is those two teams, but we are also a team and we go out to be as good as we possibly can. And it's almost like the forgotten team. So I think when we're out on that game, it's us four against everybody. And I think that's the hardest thing to get your head round. But also when you do get your head round it, it's quite a nice feeling to know that no matter what happens, it's us four. And no matter kind of what's happening on the game or in the crowd, like you've always got your team of four. So yeah, hardest thing, but probably one of the best things as well.
It must be weird though. It's almost like if nobody's talking about you, then you've done it right kind of
thing. Yeah, and that's it. It's like the best games are where people aren't talking about us and Like, it's always when you were in grassroots, it was like, if you came off the pitch and one of, like, the parents went, oh, we didn't even recognise you were there, you were like, yeah, nailed it. Like, which is weird because as a player, you want everyone talking about you, don't you? And as a referee, you're like, as no one mentioned us, brilliant. Like, we've smashed it.
Can you tell us maybe about the single hardest game you've had to referee? You know, is it one where you see there's tackles flying in early and you think, okay, I've got a game in my hands here? Or is it a game that has big stakes behind it? Is that what makes it difficult?
Yeah, I think the games, we kind of take each game as it comes. And I think it's like the players, we do our analysis and we look at kind of how teams set up for set pieces or like who presses where. But at the end of the day, that can all change as soon as you step out onto the pitch. So we've kind of got to be ready for anything. And I think that's the hardest bit. It's very much expect the unexpected. I mean, we've seen games where you'd expect one team to win and then they don't. And that's the beauty of football, but it's what makes it very difficult to referee sometimes. You might have a team that just field a completely different side to what you expect. And all of a sudden, all the planning you'd done pre-match is just irrelevant because they've set up completely different. And I think there's not a single most difficult game. I think it is that difficulty of the constant change and the constant growth. And obviously, like you mentioned, the FA Cup final. And that was just sheer, like, we've never experienced that before. So it wasn't kind of the fact that, I mean, the game is what it is, but it was just the fact that all of a sudden it's like, right, you've got VAR, you've got a sold out Wembley, like Prince William's in the crowd, as is your entire family, like no pressure, but just don't get anything wrong. So I think it's sometimes those games where you put pressure on yourself because you think, this is really not the game where I need to be getting stuff wrong.
Speaking of that game, within the first 60 seconds, Man United had the ball in the back of the net. You flagged El Atun for offside after the move was complete. This was also the first time VAR was in use in the Women's FA Cup. Talk us through how the whole process worked on that decision, for example, and how you communicated that.
Yeah, so obviously before that game, having found out that we'd all got the game as a team, it was the training that we got given for the VAR was great. I mean, I think when you get given a game like that, you're already thinking, oh, that's big. And you kind of almost peak, like the FA Cup final in England is like the game that everyone wants. And like, as someone who hadn't been in the game for that long, really, to get that, you're like, wow, this is a big deal. And your family are like over the moon and everything. And then you get told this VAR and you think, okay, like this is different. And the amount of training we got on it was great. We all, I think, were quietly confident that kind of we were happy. Obviously probably didn't expect to be using it within the first minute. But I mean, like I say, I think when Football Focus did the thing, I was quite surprised at how calm we all sounded, because that really was the first time we'd used it in a proper game. And for that to be the FA Cup final was kind of like added pressure. But as a team, like, you can't be happier with a decision like that, because we were all quite nervous, obviously, with the game being what it was. But for the decision to be kind of like, right, she's offside, but we're going to wait. And then you're kind of thinking, oh, it's going to go in, isn't it? And then, but then for the ball to go in and for us to know exactly what we were doing as a team. And for those who have heard the Football Focus piece, for, you know, the ref to blow the whistle and the VAR check to be complete. And just as a team, even like Chloe, the other assistant, and Abby is fourth, just their support even. And you almost forget about it. Like, looking back, it's just one big blur. But hearing it back, I think as a team to get a decision like that right so early on in such a big game was like, I think that just highlights the professionalism of us all. And 60 seconds into the biggest game of our career, in front of all those people, first time using VAR, and to just go, actually, that worked really well. And I think it's one of those times where, as refs, we go, you know what, let's be proud of ourselves, because if I'd scored a goal at Wembley, I'd be buzzing. And I feel like this is like the referee equivalent. And I don't think as refs we do that very well. We do the, oh, we got this wrong, how can that be better? We do that, we're great at that. But when we get something right, I think it's really important that we also go, actually, that's really good. And I didn't realise that the football focus thing was going to be done until it was done. And I was like, actually, that's really good, because I think it shows people that when we get stuff right, that's how it works. And I think as a team, we were just glad it was right, I think.
Yeah, I remember that football focus clip. I'm glad they put it up. But I remember them being like, to you in your ears, great call, like bang on. And I loved that. That was quite sweet how you all support each other on the pitch. You were added to FIFA's assistant referees list at the start of the year. So that means you're now eligible to officiate international fixtures. How does that feel?
Yeah, it's one of those, people say it makes it worthwhile. It's one of those moments. I mean, we've alluded to for this chat, we work so hard and all the group do. You could give most of that room a badge for how hard they work and for how professional they are. And when you've worked so hard and your family have gone through it with you and your friends have gone through it with you, and now the amount of support we have at the PGML, and because we're a big group, but we're a tight-knit group, so even to be able to like message the sports scientists and the sports psychologists and kind of Bibi and your coach and say, like, we've done it, like, we've got the badge, because that's what we all aim for. And, you know, at 14, I wouldn't have said I wanted to be FIFA, because I probably didn't even know what it was other than a game that my brother used to play. But then as you kind of get there, it becomes more achievable. And then when you get it and you can tell your family who have driven you around before you got a driving licence and who have stood in the rain and who've been there when you've come back in tears because you've gotten offside wrong and things like that, like, to be able to give them, like, the pride that they can have as well, is it kind of makes it all worthwhile.
You said in a Derbyshire Times interview that your gran watches every game you officiate, and that your family were just waiting for you to go abroad, really. So they must be delighted.
Yeah, they're great, and like I say, they do all the hard bit, and they get the wrath, don't they? When we get something wrong, we take it out on them. And yeah, my grandma will find every game, whether it's abroad or back home, and whether it's easy to find on like Sky or BBC, or whether she's got to watch it in Austrian because I'm away in Austria doing a game, she will find it. And she was the first person I called when I got the FIFA badge, and yeah, to see, like, well, she was in tears, to be fair, but we were all crying. But I think that's again what people don't realise, like, our family is so invested, and rightly so. They've had to go through games and games in the rain, and for them now to be able to watch us on the telly because of the growth of the game, and then for something like FIFA to come along and to be able to turn around to them and say, you know, those times where I told you I was never going to do it again, it's worth it now. And yeah, to make your family proud, it's like the players, isn't it? Like, they want to walk out at Wembley in front of their family, and luckily my grandma got to come to Wembley when I was there, and that's something that will kind of live with me forever and live with her forever. And it's something that no matter what happens, no one can take that away from us now.
I love that. I think that's probably something we forget about as well, that you've got proud family watching you perform on the big stage. Where do you want to end up as a referee? What's the dream gig?
Oh, that's a tough one, because it was always FIFA, and now I don't really know where to go. I think, you know, the game's getting bigger, and to stay involved in the WSL and the Championship and women's football in general for as long as possible, and obviously now with the badge to go and represent kind of the country, sounds big when you say it like that, to go and represent the country, and obviously a major tournament and Euros and World Cups and Olympics it'd be great, and that's what we all kind of dream for now. But just to be able to carry on growing, and I think, like you say, making your family proud and making all the support staff proud that put so much work into us. And yeah, I think I've got to say some kind of World Cup or Euros would be great, but baby steps. I've only just got the badge, so I should start small.
Well, I mean, you've ticked off one dream, so that's a pretty good start.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe we'll be seeing you at the next World Cup. Who knows? Wherever that ends up being. Fingers crossed.
Somewhere warm, and they'll love it, won't they?
Well, ideally, you know, Australia was in the winter, but we'll never mind. Yeah, hopefully we will see you at a major tournament. We will no doubt see you in the WSL again, but really appreciate you taking time to chat to us and chat through your training and how it all works, and it's been great.
No, thank you, I've really enjoyed it, so thank you for chatting to me.
Thank you for listening. Chloe and I are back on Tuesday to react to a huge weekend in the WSL, including Man United's trip to Arsenal and, of course, the battle between the top two, Chelsea against Manchester City. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and X. Chloe's at Morgie_89, I'm at Girls in the Bull, and we're at Upfront_pod. You can also find us on YouTube at Upfront Pod. See you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.